Destination, freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. From the chaotic days following the Civil War, there emerged a giant of a man who, by his own fierce struggle and one-track determination, succeeded in becoming the undisputed leader of Southern Negro educators. In a chapter entitled, Up From Slavery, Destination Freedom tells the story of Booker T. Washington.
He was never quite sure of the exact place or exact date of his birth. But he knew it was in a log cabin 16 feet square and that the naked earth was the floor. He was never quite sure of what time he stopped working at night, but he always knew that when a cock crowed in the dark mornings, he awoke and started work. And he never quite knew who his father was, but he knew he had been watched over by a sad-faced woman who never sang until this pregnant morning.
Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down.
He pulled himself up on his elbows in the dark. Something had happened to her that had never happened before.
Mama? Mama? Something the matter?
You awake, son? Good. Then it's gotten into you, too.
Me? Are you sick?
I've been sick, but now I'm healed.
Well, am I healed too?
When the sun comes up, you'll be healed too, son.
Well, it's time to go out in the field for work. I'll go to Big House and tell the master you're not well. I'll do your part.
Son!
Yeah, Ma?
It's not time to go up to the Big House yet.
Yes, it is. The overseer says when the rooster crows to be out in the field. Hear the rooster?
How would you like the rooster for breakfast?
Mama.
Him and his kind of wickedness to work for the master all the years I've lived. Well, this morning we'll have him for breakfast. I'll use the hat.
Mama, please. The overseer will be down on us. Mama.
You killed him.
I killed the voice of the master. Now he won't call the slaves to work anymore.
Then the lash will call us. Overseer said
no
so.
No one will call you to the fields anymore. After tomorrow morning, there'll be no more slaves.
No more slaves on this plantation?
Or any plantation.
Then I'm as good as a master?
You always were.
And I can do what he does.
What is it you want?
A school. A school where there'll be no overseers, no masters, and where I can learn to work the fields and teach freedmen to own and hold the land.
Before you teach, you gotta learn. I wondered why you volunteered to do work around the master school just to look on the inside. Well, it'll be a long time before you get on the inside, son.
It'll be a long time before I'll be free.
It'll be a short time. The grapevine told me. The Yankees will tell you.
And in another morning, in place of the rooster, a Yankee regiment woke the boy. A courier called through the row of cabins.
Everybody, up to the Big House. Everybody out. Everybody up to the Big House. Everybody.
The boy followed the sad woman and the slaves up to the porch of the master's house. He stared up at the man in blue uniform and the courier with his scroll of paper. The words he heard were not in his dream.
Here now. Order. Order. The President of the United States has sent me to read the following proclamation, effective immediately. Everyone here?
Yes,
very well, listen. I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, by virtue of the power invested in me, do this first day of January 1863 proclaim that all persons held as slaves within any state in rebellion against the United States shall henceforth and forever be free.
Amen.
And upon this, I believe to be an act of justice.
The courier read on until the long scroll was unrolled. The boy sat trembling beside the sad woman and was sure he was still in the dream until the courier began to count the new freedmen and to concern himself with their next move.
It's your turn, woman. Do you intend to stay on this land?
I'm going as far from it as I can get.
At least you'll have a cabin here. You can build on that.
My boy here wants to build on the dream he has. I'm going to help him.
This your boy?
He is.
What's his name?
Sometimes I just call him Baby.
Look, woman, I'm collecting this information for the benefit of the government. I can't put down Baby for a boy this size. What's his real name?
And sometimes they call him Booker.
Booker what?
Booker is soft.
Ma'am, let me school you in the habits of free people. Free people have two names, at least two. A first and a last. Now, what's going to be the boy's last name, assuming the first is Booker? Say a name after this plantation, or his master, Hamilton.
I named the dog after his master.
You got to name the boy something. What shall I put down?
Just put down Booker.
I tell you, free people all have two.
Hear free people can name themselves. Is that right?
Well, no law one way or the other.
Then someday my boy will choose his own name.
Very well. I'll register Booker. Now, what do you intend to make of him? Farmer, millhand, carpenter?
And I hear that free people can make of themselves what they want to be.
You hear an awful lot for an old woman.
Booker will make of himself what he dreams of being. Now, if you let us pass, we'll be on our way to Malden, Virginia. He has a stepfather there waiting for him.
Malden's little better than a slave camp. He'll never get out of it.
Some thought he'd never get out of slavery. He did. Good day, Mr. Courier.
Good day, old woman. Good day, Booker.
The courier stood on the plantation steps and watched the sad woman and her boy disappear up the road. Len scratched their names off the register and gave them up for lost. The pair traveled many miles through the mountains and woods and came to the little town called Malden, made their way to a cluster of cabins, and at the door of one, the woman knocked.
Is that you, old woman?
Stetson, I said I'd bring the boy if ever I got free. Well, we're free.
Come in. Look around at what you've come to.
Is this where we to live?
In a cabin worse than the one you left. You expected to step into a better world just because you left your chains behind? This boy here, he's thin, reedy. Here we're just one step from slavery, and we need men who can work or fight. He looks good for neither.
Booker is going to school.
School? There's not a school a freed man can get into. You think that things are different? We're free, but we own nothing. Secret clubs and clans are a-forming to herd us back into slavery. Every boss here is against an ex-slave learning to read or write, just as they was before the war. Work is from sunrise to dark, just as before. If you don't do that, you starve. You can take your pick, Booker. Which will be your grave? The salt mine or the coal mine?
You said he was too thin to do hard work.
Thin men eat just as much food as thick men, I hear. Which?
Salt mine.
Then put your bones in bed.
He rose the next morning with the sun, and at the salt mines, the foreman inspected his bones through his scanty clothes.
Oh. His kind don't last long in the mine, Stetson.
Hey, he's going to be a big-sized man, Mr. Foreman. And he's my stepson. Food's all he needs.
Can he lift 250 pounds?
Well, I wouldn't say I...
Try that salt keg, you. Lift the keg on the table.
Me?
Yeah, it's you who wants a job. Lift it.
I'll try.
Oh, yeah, it's no use. He's never done the hard work before. Can't you just let him mark the numbers on the kegs as they're packed, maybe?
Can he read the letters?
Well, no, but
well, if he could lift the kegs, it might be worth teaching him to at least read a few digits.
You mean if I lift the keg, you'll teach me to write numbers?
Well, it's against the custom here to teach freedmen, but I might teach a strong boy.
Which keg can I lift?
Well, they're always the same.
I lift it.
Don't, Booker. Don't try to lift the keg.
I lift it.
The thin boy bent over the keg, strained the muscles in his back and legs, and finally held the keg off the ground.
Eh, you'll have to do that 10 times an hour. I'll show you how to write the numbers from 1 to 10. Drop it. Pick up the chalk.
The foreman drove a hard bargain, and the boy stuck to it until he had learned to write the numbers.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10. I can write 10.
Then he persuaded the foreman to teach him how to put the magic numbers together to form greater numbers and how to work with them. But he went home evenings, his mind still hungry for more, until he made a bargain with a beggar.
Who are you? What do you want?
Well, don't look as if I'm an enemy. I'm an ex-slave, too. You spare a meal?
You've been a soldier. You know conditions in camps like these. Me and my boys all this working. Now, if you could pay something...
I can't pay.
I can't spare a meal. Good day.
Papa, who was it?
Someone we can't help and who can't help us. Get ready for work.
The boy got ready for work, but when he looked outside, he saw the soldier pick up a newspaper and stare at it long and hard. He went out to him.
Mister.
Yes?
Are you reading that paper?
Well, you're not blind.
And you know how to write, too.
Well, you're very bright.
Look, if you had the time, would you teach me to read it?
Teaching's very taxing on the stomach. It's hard to teach well when you're hungry.
I could get you a meal for it. I'd work extra in the coal mine for that.
Commendable. But one meal and one lesson wouldn't go very far. I'd still starve in this hole, and you'd still be ignorant. Now, my stomach informs me that a whole series of meals might influence me to part with some knowledge. But, of course, the pennies you pick up in the mines couldn't handle that.
No, they could, not alone. Yeah, there's 100 families here who'd feed you for a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
If I could get them to agree to...
Arrange for the series of meals, my boy. Oh. Covering, say, the span of a year. And I'll arrange for the lectures. Go ahead.
The boy went ahead and got the teacher students and spent his few spare hours in odd study of the ways of alphabets and syllables and learned the geography of the land and one word that stuck in his mind.
This here spot on the map's Washington, Booker. This here's where Lincoln died. Here's where he wrote the proclamation, Washington.
Washington.
A good name. Here's the city of Richmond, the Confederate capital. And here's where we are. And if you ever want to get out of here, you've got to go this way.
He learned the roads that led out of his closed town. And one day the soldier shut the books and said,
"All right, lad, your lessons are over.
Are you going to examine me?"
I've examined you 100 times more than you needed just to get the meals. You know all that you can get from me. You've got part of the key that'll unlock the prison you're in. Now it's up to you to get the other part.
But where? Where'll I get...
Well, it's a school free men can enter. It's an industrial school. They call it Hampton. Only one of its kind.
I'll go to Hampton.
And it's a long way from here, and... take more money to make it halfway than you make a year in a salt mine.
They make more in the coal mines.
Life is shorter in the coal mines. What's driving you, son?
I can't live and see all around me people hungry for learning and needing the ABCs that the master's sons take for granted. All my life I dreamed of school.
Ah, be practical, lad. How much you think one ex-slave working for pennies can do, even if he had the chance?
I don't know. I intend to see.
He went down in the coal pits, and in a year had put enough pennies in a sack to take them to the office of the stagecoachman, who counted the miles they would carry a man.
Now, this isn't enough to get you to Hampton, fella.
How close will it take me?
Maybe near Richmond. From there, you'll have to either find some money in the road, unlikely, or make it on foot past the night raiders who are looking for loose freedmen, which is impossible. Either way, I'll put you out when your money runs out.
He rode out his fare and walked through the woods and mountains, dodged night raiders, hid in the underbrush, and came into the Richmond market hungry and ragged, and found the ex-Confederate city still hostile.
Smoke fish.
Please, mister.
If Ken is not pleased, it gets it soon.
I got three left. How much will it buy?
Loafer, when I get ready to give away my fish, I'll call the cats. You're free fish for yourself. Fish, smoke fish.
He went fishing for himself and searched the streets for food and work. And at night, he found a place under the high wooden sidewalks of the city. He slipped under and slept until morning, walked out towards the docks, and watched a captain and his crew unloading a ship of pig iron plates.
Easy, man. Don't strain. Set it down now. Easy. Easy does
Captain.
It. Easy.
Captain.
You looking for something, lad?
For a job.
You strong enough to lift pig iron plates?
Well, I don't know.
Well, it's the only kind of job on the docks this week.
If I had something to eat first, maybe I could do it.
Oh, no, I don't fall for that. You're going to say if you weren't hungry, you'd be strong. Eat first and work later. Oh, no. Maybe you can't really do the work in the first place.
Oh, I can do it all right.
If you can lift one pig iron plate hungry, you're worth two full. Lift one and I'll invest in your breakfast.
Lift the whole plate?
You want to eat a whole breakfast?
I'll try it.
He bent his body as he had bent it over the keg of salt. With all the strength the years in the mines had given him, raised the heavy plates, took it to a pile, set it down.
You did it on your nerves. No man's able to lift a plate on muscle alone. What do they call you?
Booker.
Well, you've won yourself a breakfast. Hey, stand up. What's the matter with you? Hey, mate, she's fainted. Help me up with him. Help me.
The mates helped him to his feet, and with breakfast in a room under the Richmond sidewalk, he worked the docks until the ship sailed and the captain paid him off.
All I can pay is your meals and this watch. It's gold. Got it in the old country. You keep it till you're broke again, then pawn it and start from scratch.
He put the watch in a pocket without a hole and hurried on to Hampton. Arrived in time to stand in line while the registrar checked in students and looked down at his ragged clothes.
You. Who do you call yourself?
Booker.
Booker who?
Well, just Booker's all.
Quiet, please. Young man, the school's overcrowded and we have no room for pranksters and tramps. Now, what do you want?
Well, I came to learn how to perhaps run a school myself.
Well, it's quite a noble ambition, but I'm sorry. This is an industrial college. It's only for those who have had some schooling.
Well, I had some.
Where?
In Malden.
Oh, that's a salt and coal mining camp. Here's our entrance examination. But you've got to know something about mathematics.
I'll take it. I'll fill it out now.
The boy called Booker took the digits and fitted them into their proper place, and the registrar was more careful.
Well, you've gotten these answers from somewhere. All the students who work here, who come here, must work as well as study. I'm giving you a broom. Clean out the storeroom, and when you're finished, call me.
The boy took the broom and swept the room four times for his odd entrance examination. When he had finished, the registrar came in.
You're through?
I'm through.
She looked amazed at the ragged figure standing in the center of a spotless room, wiped her hands on the floor, and said,
I'm sorry. You can register.
Thank you.
Now, your name?
Booker?
Yes.
Booker T. Washington.
He named himself and went inside the college to make of himself what he had dreamed of being. He worked his way through and mastered every detail of the industrial arts, taught in its classes, and formed a philosophy that was to become his guide for life.
I shall hereafter fight to see that no man in the South, Negro or white, is forced to undergo the same trials and struggles for an education that my generation was forced to face. And I'll tell everyone looking for opportunity to cast down their buckets where they are. That's why I want to build a school, Colonel Armstrong.
He was talking to the president and builder of Hampton Institute.
That's why I built this one, Washington. Another's needed. Now, you, more than any teacher we've had, have a philosophy that'll fit the South nowadays. And if you're willing, I've found a place for you to start.
Where?
It's on a few acres near the town of Montgomery, Alabama. It's called Tuskegee.
I don't know if you're willing to accept the job of running the school.
I'll accept the job right now.
Good. I'll wire the authorities. You'll be there within a week. I'll take you over the grounds myself and show you what you've got to work with. It's not much, I understand, but we'll see. We'll see.
They came, and they saw, and Washington said,
"There's not much here is right. Just a shanty and an old church building.
It's all the state gave to start with.
Where's the school?"
That you'll have to build yourself, unless you can conduct classes inside this old church.
Under that shaky roof?
I see all you see, Washington. I'm going to loan you $150 to start. It's all I've got. I've told the farmers in the community that you were opening up today.
You think they'll come to this old church?
It's a beginning.
It's a sad beginning.
You pushed your way up from a worse beginning. I know being planted here is like struggling all your life to get out of a grave and being buried again, but take your own advice. Cast down your buckets where you are. Stay and see what you can bring up. Good day, Washington.
He sat down on the broken pew of the old church and looked up through a hole in the rooftop at the clouds gathering in the sky. After what seemed a long while, someone knocked at the church door.
Come in.
He took out the watch the captain had given him and noticed the time. It was morning, but the clouds had made it evening.
Pardon me, mister. This the new school?
Well, if you call it that.
Are you Washington, the principal?
That's right.
Might have known it. Got your watch out checking on who's late. Glad I got here early. Half Montgomery's coming up the road.
They are?
They said you was opening today with a course in farming, didn't they?
That's right.
I'll just sit in the front pew here, if you don't mind. You sit in this pew when Reverend Carey was preaching to you.
Well, I'm afraid we won't have much class today, mister.
Radcliffe's the name.
You see the roots.
Yeah, just the way it did when Reverend Carey had the place. Over the same pew, too. Well, this time I didn't forget my umbrella. I'll just hold it over you here, Professor, while you go over the lesson. That high enough?
He gave his first lesson in the church while the student held the umbrella. And he saw the same hunger for schooling that had caused him to push on, bring people from the valleys and the town and hills into the old church until he had established his class and could call them together in the churchyard to take the next step.
I know most of you wanted to come to a school already built and where you could study in well-constructed buildings. Well, if we expect to have these buildings, there's only one way to get them, to build them ourselves. My plan is not only that all agricultural and domestic work at Tuskegee will be done by students, but that the buildings will also be put up by your hands. We may make mistakes, but we'll also learn valuable lessons.
Mr. Washington?
Yes, Mr. Radcliffe?
You say we're having any money.
Not enough to hire contractors to build buildings.
And in order to build, you've got to have bricks, Mr. Washington. Where'd you get the money to buy bricks?
Well, I propose we do the same for bricks as the buildings. Make our own, and then build. Now, we'll build a furnace and bake enough bricks not only to build our school, but to sell to the farmers.
Where we get the clay for all this, Mr. Washington?
My motto still is, cast down your buckets where you are. Why, under your feet is the best clay in the country. We'll make our killing with it and our bricks.
With blueprints from an old book, he dug a pit and built a furnace, and the students molded bricks and put them inside to bake. When the baking was done, the farmer called him.
I wanted you to look first, Mr. Washington.
Yes. Go on, pull out the tray.
They all cracked. The furnace was made wrong.
Yes. I called back the students. I have enough money to fix another furnace. We'll try again.
He dug a second furnace, worked it with his hands, and watched the students mold bricks and slip them in the oven. And on the morning after the baking, the farmer called again.
I came up to see you, Mr. Washington, before we went down to the oven.
What happened?
The came out cracked again. And you said that was the last of your money.
It had been the last of his money, but in the morning he went into town and took the advice of the captain of the pig iron ship.
I'm a pawnbroker, Mr. Washington, not Santa Claus.
How much is it worth?
Well, considering the gold in it...
How much?
I'd say $40. That enough?
It's just enough to buy material for one more furnace. I'll take it.
He took it and went back and with his own hands molded the furnace and the bricks and set the fire and watched the oven. When the baking was done, the farmer asked,
Shall I open it for you, Mr. Washington?
Open it.
You got your eyes closed.
How are they?
As pretty a batch of bricks as your eyes will ever see.
They gathered the bricks and built the buildings, and farmers from across the states came to buy them and to leave their sons and daughters at Tuskegee. And the principal expanded his faculty and brought in a chemist from Iowa and asked searchingly,
Are you sure you're willing to give up your place at Iowa to teach at Tuskegee?
I'm certain of it.
Good. Then instead of telling the farmers what to do, we'll show them what to do. And they'll never forget it. I'll call your department the George Washington Carver Laboratory and make it what you want it to be.
His chemist made the laboratory the most famous in the South, and money that had been held back poured into the school. Three presidents came down to inspect the Tuskegee grounds, and one invited him to Washington.
Stay and have dinner with me, Washington. And I'd like to know just why you turned those cavalry horses I sent you into plow horses.
Well, you see, Mr. President,
do you mind if the photographers get a picture of you and Dr. Washington and dinner together?
Of course. Now, go ahead. What were you saying about those horses? You'll have to do some explaining.
Photographers got their picture, and prints of it reached the Alabama newspapers even before the Tuskegee principal had gotten off the train.
That's him. That's Washington getting off the train now.
Grab him. Pull him over here. Grab him.
Come on.
What's the matter?
Matter?
What's the matter?
Matter, you see this picture of you on the paper?
You know it's against the state law for a nigger to be eating with a white man.
And in the White House.
Give it to him, Ned. Give it to him.
They gave it to him, but beaten and crippled, the man who had built the Alabama school had only quiet words to say to his angry friends.
This is an outrage, Washington. I know how you must hate the prejudiced hoodlums who did this.
No, Colonel. Few things are capable of making one so blind and narrow as race prejudice. I'll permit no man to narrow and degrade my soul by making me hate him.
And he was to say many things that people in Alabama were to repeat as their own.
I know too many men with enough paper diplomas to boil a pot, but not enough skill or initiative to grow or get a cabbage to put in the pot. The white man who begins by cheating a Negro usually ends by cheating a white man. The white man who begins by discriminating against a Negro soon discriminates against white men, too. And all of this makes it important that the whole nation lend a hand in trying to lift the burden of ignorance in the South.
And though his life was short, he left a long shadow at Tuskegee that lengthened with the years and stood as a monument to the man who came up from slavery, named himself, and made of himself what he wanted to be.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Booker T. Washington, Negro educator. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and is produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Booker T. Washington was played by Fred Pinkard. Others were Weslin Tilden, Oscar Brown Jr., Donald Gallagher, Charles Mountain, and Tony Parrish. The special music was written by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week when Destination Freedom will present Black Boy, the story of Richard Wright. This This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.